You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. My name is Cora Zahn, and my very special guest today is Greg Carrick. And we're going to be talking about street photography. Good morning, Greg.
How you going, Cora? Good to hear you again.
Great. This is great. Thank you so much for coming on to Art Journal today to talk about street photography. So recently you took some photographs of Melbourne during the pandemic. Well, we're still in it, but tell us a bit about what you were doing.
Okay, I thought with the pandemic, situations will change for quite a long time, and with Melbourne going into lockdown, I thought that was a very unusual thing. I'd see a lot of unusual sights in Melbourne being quite different, pretty much abandoned. So I went down there with a camera right at the end of stage two, before stage three lockdowns came in, and just cruised around the city taking documentary type photos.
Well, you are a journalist, a photography journalist by trade, and so this would have been an interesting exercise for you.
Yeah, it was. I do like documenting townships and life in general, and sometimes I get to document very specific occasions that are big or unusual, but quite often I do like to just walk around with camera and document real life as it happens, normal life, because in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, people will look back on that time and the way we lived and be quite fascinated with all the changes that have happened since.
Absolutely. It's really interesting to look at photographs of historical photographs. We have actually a place in Healesville where one of the businesses has historical photographs displayed and of the main street in Healesville. And I'm sure at that time people took life for granted. They probably just saw what it was and didn't think anything of it. But now we look at those photographs and see how much has changed. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, well, even in Mount Evelyn, where I live, the landscape or the streetscape is slowly changing over the years. I've been there for almost 30 years, and the number of buildings that have disappeared in the main street is quite astounding. And there's not many photos of the old streetscape from back that time. So being able to document ordinary life that's around you can be very beneficial later on.
And very satisfying too, I'm sure. Tell us more about yourself, Greg. I know that, you know, people would know that you're on Yarra Valley FM, but maybe there are some people who don't know about your photography.
Well, okay, photography is a bit of a passion of mine. It's a hobby. Even if I wasn't making some money out of it as a working photojournalist at times, then I would still do it, because I'm a very visual person. I think in pictures. You know, if someone says, I live at such and such, I don't think of a map or street names. I think of a route, like I run this video through my head of how to get there, and that's how I get around. So pictures are very important to me, and just to be able to get out and do something as simple as street photography, documenting just ordinary things that happen around you that you would just walk past, to me is very satisfying.
Let's talk more about street photography after a song.
Okay, here we go. This is Samsara with Subverts.
I just need the silence to freeze, 'cause everything shuts, even the weeds. Now I can hear the wind just disappear, and I see the way you hold your knife close and tight, ready to bite. And I see the way you hold your life close and tight for the whole price. Whisper, we can't hear the honey, you owe us the damn hearts of bird. Whisper, honey, I don't need your $5 fees. So you better wrap yourself in years. Cause time's quick, our clocks have lost their gears. I don't need you anything. And I see the way you hold your knife, close and tight, ready to bite. And I see the way you hold your life, close and tight, full of price.
And you're listening to Yarra Valley FM.
More Australian music, more often.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. Greg, we're talking about street photography. It's a very particular genre of photography. Tell us more about it.
Okay, it's a bit undefinable because it's very individual or personal. Because if you look at other genres like, say, landscape photography or wedding photography or event photography or photojournalism, they all have particular looks. They can be flexible, but they're in this sort of boundary, in this sort of box, and that is quite definable. Whereas street photography is very personal, and I think it's that way because it's not something people make money out of. Yeah, you can get paid to do all the other genres, but street photography is something photographers do on their own for their own enjoyment. And so each of them develops or uses their own style in street photography, and it varies enormously. And there's just non-stop debates about, you know, what way of doing it is better, and there is no real answer to that. Some people like to be very standoffish and distant from what they're photographing, so they'll use longer lenses and zoom lenses, and other people like to get right up in their face or in the middle of action and take photos, so they use a small camera with a wide angle lens or whatever. And some people like to do it very stealthy, and others like to be very open and might approach people, say, in Melbourne and say, would you mind if I took your photo? And others will just walk around with a camera down, just held in their hand, not up to their face, and take odd snapshots around the place and try not to be seen. So there's all sorts of different ways to do it. But the way I like to do it is story. To me, story is incredibly important in photography. I do like taking landscape pictures and pretty pictures that can be hung on a wall and that sort of thing, but to me they're sort of more how can I make this as arty as possible or as pleasant as possible, but it's got no story to it. Whereas street photography, once you start taking pictures of people and scenes of everyday life, all of a sudden you're introducing story into your photos, and that's what really encaptures me, because you look at a picture with a story to it and it makes you wonder what happened just before that, what happened just after that, what are these people talking about, why are they doing this, and you begin to get more involved in the photo that you're looking at. And to me, that is the goal of street photography, to tell stories.
So with the stories, are you talking about, like, you're focusing on a character, and are you then encouraging the viewer to imagine story, or are you being a little bit more direct with the story?
Well, sometimes the story can be very direct. It might be a fishmonger working outside his shop and you see the sign there with fishmonger on it or something, say at Melbourne Market. So you can already get a lot of background of what the photo is about anyway. But other times you might, or I might be walking around Melbourne and see this rather strangely dressed character on the city street. You take the photo and it makes you wonder, where did this person come from? Why are they dressed like that? Where are they going? Why are they in the city? And all these are unanswered in the photo, so it gets your imagination kicking.
So, like a prompt for your imagination, just to get you pondering, you know, what is going on?
Yeah, and street photography can leave you with lots of questions unanswered, which means you can go back to the photo again and still wonder, and it still captures your imagination. Whereas with photojournalism that tries to tell a story that goes with, say, an article that gives you all the answers, then you've seen the photo and all the questions are answered in the article that it's with. So, job done.
So one is, like I said, a prompt to get your creative maybe flow going and, you know, engage with it in a very different way.
Yeah.
So with street photography, you said that it's more personal, but there are famous street photographers.
Yeah, there are. And some still living, but a lot of the famous ones are from quite a few decades ago, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And they're well known today because their collection has been sort of put together, and they're very interesting because they're showing a time through their street photography of things that are no longer existing, a way of life that is no longer existing, buildings and people that no longer exist. So it's because of those changes that they become more well known. There's there's millions of street photographers around today. A lot of photographers who are very famous in other fields also do street photography, and they're just not known in that field because it's not monetized. There's plenty of that sort of action happening, but it doesn't garner a lot of attention.
So if the main interest seems to be about almost a historical view of a place, what do you think? Do you think it also assists people to look at their surroundings in a fresh way as well, currently?
Yeah, it can. It makes people wonder why changes have happened and what changes will happen now that their life, their way of living will disappear. And in 20 years, what they take as normal will no longer be in existence. So being able to document that and sort of nail it down with photos, it might generate some people to do that. But there is so much of it going on, and it does have a particular foundation in the style, because back, you know, the famous ones we think of started back pre-digital era, so they were using film, and because they were walking around and it was very gun and run sort of photography, they wanted small things and light things to carry. So it was mainly with black and white sort of grainy film in little 35mm cameras, and 50, 60 years ago Leica was about the best type of camera for that. So a lot of them had these little Leicas that were very well built. You can still get a 60-year-old Leica and it runs like a clock. Whereas nowadays, our choice is a lot larger, it's a lot cheaper, and it's a lot more common. Mobile phones. I do quite a bit of street photography just using my mobile phone because it's unobtrusive, it's light, it doesn't get in people's faces, people don't notice it because everybody's hanging onto a phone, and you can just document life around you. And people are doing that whether they notice it or not, because everybody takes photos on their phone, you know, family shots, street shots, outings, events, that sort of thing. And most of them, a huge percentage of them, just disappear into the ether. They're not kept, they're not printed, they're not archived. So even though everybody has a camera nowadays, walking around with it in their pocket on their phone, in 30 years, not a lot of those photos will still exist. So if you're out there taking shots on your phone, make sure you get ways to keep that, some of those photos. Because if you say, oh yeah, they're on my computer, I've had so many hard disks die over the years and lost thousands of photos, please get them printed. Print them up. Put them in albums. People think, oh, that's old hat, and they're busy scanning old photos to put them in their computer. It's the other way around. Computers die. Hard disks die. They fail. You lose things. And you need to make those things physical. So get into your hard drive, pull out the pictures you think you should be keeping, and get them printed.
It's a good idea. It's a really good idea. I've seen you. You've got some books actually that you've made as well.
Yeah,
for yourself and your family.
You can do self-publishing. You can make little books. You can put a collection of your pictures together and go down to so many shops around here and get a photo book made, and just get a handful of them made, give them to some family members, whatever, keep a couple yourself. And these things are the things that will last, because, you know, all the electronic stuff will probably be disappeared or trashed or traded in or die, and they're gone. So you can either have individual photos printed and put them in an album or make a photo book, and those are the documented type of pictures that will survive.
It's a good idea. I'm the same. Computers have died. So yeah, let's talk a bit more about some of your influences after a song.
Okay, we're going to hear Bowser with their track "People in the TV."
We'll be right back. G'day, this is Nicholas Connors.
Hi, I'm Amy Francis.
Hi, I'm Alana from Legs Electric, and you're listening to Yarra Valley FM.
Oh, I come alive in the dead of the night.
More Australian music, more often.
Oh my, they like my style, yeah, I'm looking alright.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show, and my very special guest today is Greg Carrick. We're talking about street photography. So, Greg, tell us a bit about a couple of your influences.
Okay, well, there is quite a number of famous old, well-known street photographers, but they weren't called street photographers back then. In fact, some of them didn't even consider themselves to be photographers. And one of the ones who's come to sort of the general public's attention lately is a lady called Vivian Meyer. And she documented her life and all that sort of life around her in a very street photography style, even though that term didn't exist back then. But she did it sort of unobtrusively, unnoticed, unpublished, and very, very quietly. And it wasn't until after she'd passed away that trunk loads of her photos and films and undeveloped films were discovered, and then after painstaking work opened out to the public to see. So her photography was very typical of street photography back then, and that influence goes through to today, where it's just a person walking around with a camera taking photos of life as it happens around them. Now, the reason she was sort of not known until after she'd passed away, there was three things really. One is, females were not taken seriously. Okay, photography was a man's world, and as so many things were. So with a female with a camera was not taken seriously. Oh, just someone taking snapshots, you know, sort of not important. So she was able to move around and capture things that and people just ignored her. Also, part of her character was she liked to be ignored. She didn't like to be in the limelight. She didn't want to be noticed. But the third thing was photography was still an uncategorized discipline, in that somebody sets up an easel in by the Yarra River and starts painting. Okay, you know, oh, he's doing an artwork. Okay, but someone with a camera, no, that's not art. So you just ignore it. So being female, not wanting to be noticed, and not doing something that was considered serious or arty, it made her so insignificant and forgotten about. So those three things combined together really made her sort of go through a whole life taking thousands upon thousands of photos, and no one noticed or cared. So street photography is a bit like that. You can wander around and be in the middle of a crowd taking photos, and no one cares, no one notices.
There's actually a really great documentary about her that you can access through the library. It's well worth seeing. It's about how she had thousands of undeveloped films, and how someone discovered it and printed them, and made her famous after her passing. It's fascinating. But one of the things that's so striking about her photography is her composition.
Yeah, composition is very important in photography. It's not unique to photography. A lot of compositional tricks and types in photography comes directly from the art world of painting, because painting was the photography of the day back before cameras, because you're working on a rectangle and you're trying to put life in general in that rectangle. And what you're doing as a painter is choosing what is in that rectangle and what is left out of that rectangle. So you're choosing the content, you're choosing the composition, you know, where different components of the photo or the painting are in that rectangle. And you're trying to tell a story in that rectangle of life in general. So lots of compositional tricks in photography are direct from the painting world. So there's things like, obviously colour. Now, all the famous painters painted in colour, whereas photography, there's a bit of a difference. A lot of street photography is done in black and white, so that's one extra trick we have up our sleeve that the painters didn't do centuries ago. Colour has weight to it, and different colours have different sorts of weights. You can paint a beautiful, idyllic sort of country scene, but if you put something in that scene that is red, all of a sudden it stands out and it is noticed. And John Constable was famous for that, the English painter. He'd do beautiful country scenes, and there'd be one person, small person in the photo, wearing a red vest or something. And that was part of his signature look. He'd put this little item of red somewhere in his paintings, and that's what draws your eye, because red is far more noticeable. It has more weight than the greens and blues and greys and so on. So weight is very important in composition, because weight is something that draws your eye, whether it's through striking colour or size or dominance or something with hard edges in a photo that's full of other soft edge stuff, like a hay cart or a tractor in a field. You know, a man-made thing is harder and heavier and often bigger than the things that are around it, so it has more weight. So where you put that weight in that rectangle is quite important. And that's where things like rule of thirds, you know, a lot of people even who aren't photographers have heard, oh, the rule of thirds. And that is where you have your rectangle that your photo is, and you divide it up into thirds, horizontally and vertically, so you end up with 9 rectangles in that big rectangle. And where you put objects in those little rectangles is very important, because that's, if you're taking a photo, most people would say, oh, I'll stick this in the middle of the picture. But quite often the picture will look a lot better if you move it into another third of the photo. So you've got the object in one third and two thirds of the photo, say the background scene or something, rather than have the object smack in the middle of the picture.
So that relates to the golden mean. Could you explain why that is visually more appealing or satisfying?
Okay, it is unusual because our eyes don't look at rectangles. You know, we don't see the world as a rectangle. We walk around and what's in front of us is in focus and sharp and catches our attention, but then the rest of the world drifts off almost to 180 degrees around us. We can see quite wide, but none of that is in detail. It's only what we're looking at directly that is in focus and we notice more. So in the art world with paintings and photographs, we're confining that down to a rectangle. So we're leaving a lot out that we see normally. There's tricks. You divide that rectangle up in different ways. I've talked about the rule of thirds. There's also the golden mean and Fibonacci, I think it's called, swirl. And people use that to have compositional techniques in their pictures. That can be very complex, and some people apply that retrospectively to pictures and say, oh, I used the Fibonacci, you know, swirl in that picture to make it look better. But really, no, they're just kidding themselves. They just use something simple like the rule of thirds, because it is a lot easier and produces very good results anyway. Leading lines is another thing. When you look at a picture, your eye goes to something straight away, and that is, it could be the main object that you want people to see anyway, or it could be something that leads your eye to the main object. So a very common trick, if you're down the beach, say, and you're taking a photo, and the photo's got a bit of the sand, and then the water, and then the distant horizon, and then maybe clouds. All those things are sort of horizontal and can be quite bland. So what you do is you find a bit of a driftwood or some rocks on the shore, and you put them in the picture. And that driftwood or the rocks lead you further into the photo. So they're not the main subject, what they do is direct your eye in this line further into the picture.
So you set it up.
Yeah, you do. You set it up, and that's one of the things where paintings and photography, because they're just a rectangle, you're choosing what's going to be in there. You are cheating in the way, because you can be walking down the beach and you can take a photo where you're standing, or you can move 6 foot to the left and your photo changes, because all of a sudden you're now including something that's lying on the sand there in front of you that wasn't in the picture before you moved. So you walk around with your camera and you find out what's around that should be in that little rectangle that you're going to present to the world.
They're great tips. So what I'm wondering is, with the rule of thirds, so if so many people, well, photographers understand that rule, does it ever get like, oh yes, I know what they've done, they've used the rule of thirds, and it can't, does it ever become like old hat, or is it just always like always good?
It's pretty much always good, in the sense that it's not a new invention for photography. It's all based on methods of art from centuries past. So, you know, paintings and things. You look at old famous paintings, you go to a museum or pick up a book of paintings from old masters, and you'll pick up all these compositional techniques. You'll learn about the use of colour and light. There's this thing we use in photography called the Rembrandt lighting, which is based on paintings that Rembrandt did. He was famous for it. He'd use one, two at the most, sources of light in his paintings. So some objects were very, very highly lit or side lit, and the rest of the painting is very dark, and they're very, very striking. We did the same thing with photography. We use light. And sometimes we just say, oh, using Rembrandt lighting here, because I've only got one light source here coming in from the side. So things are lit very strikingly in a certain way. And a lot of the other parts of the photo are very dark.
So really, in a way, these are like tools to understand how you're going to structure your photo. Is that right?
Yeah. You might hear the term, oh, he paints with light in his photos. And that's true. Light is everything in a photo, you know, because you only see things because they're lit. So how you arrange light, and sometimes you can't arrange light, you can't move the sun unless you wait for 6 hours and the sun moves itself. But you can move yourself. You can take a photo of a group of people with the sun behind them, or the sun in front of them, or the sun at the side of them, just by moving around a few feet. So you can play with light in all those sorts of ways with photography.
It's about being aware of all of these distinctions. But there are people who also will choose a time of day to take a photograph. As there are painters who paint in the open air, they will choose a certain time of day and they'll go back.
Yeah.
If they haven't completed it, they'll go back to that time of day.
And some photographers won't go out in the middle of the day. It's a waste of time. They'll think, no. I've been out this morning after sunrise, great light there. I won't go out until evening, when there's sunset or dusk, and what they call the blue hour, where the light is very, very blue in the sky and it changes the colour of everything.
It just sounds like a lot of it is about being aware.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can get apps even on your phone that photographers use that tell you when the sunrise is, when the sunset is. You can even do things like location-specific stuff. If you've got mountains around you, you can find out when the sun is going to disappear, not by the horizon, but behind the mountains, which are higher up. And you can time things, find out what season of the year the sun is going to set, and where it's going to set, and where the light will be. And then you look at weather apps, you know, what are the clouds going to be like? If it's like every year there's the meteor showers that were, you know, happened last week, and they happen regularly at the same time every year. And for the last 5 years I've gone out to photograph them and it's just been overcast. You can't even see the moon or the stars, so it's a waste of time. So weather plays a huge part in all this as well.
Well, it wasn't a waste of time. It might have been clear. You had to be ready.
Yeah, but you know, a weather app will tell you it's going to be foggy all night or heavily overcast. And you know it's a waste of time getting up. 3 o'clock actually, in the morning.
I do actually. I have noticed a tree in Hillsville.
Mm-hmm.
Every year at a particular time of year, around about now, a couple of weeks ago, there's a particular light that hits this tree and it just glows.
Yeah.
And it doesn't last for very long. Only just for this little, it might last for about 3 weeks and it's done.
Mm.
You just don't see that tree in the same way again.
Yeah.
Until the same time the following year.
And some spots in the world are famous for that. There's a certain waterfall coming off a mountain, I think it's in America, and it's high up and you know, it's quite a hike to get there. And it's 1 or 2 days a year. I think it might only be 1 day a year. The sun is at the right angle in the right place and the whole waterfall coming off this mountain lights up like a rainbow. And because it's so well known, and it only happens once a year, that day there's, you know, like 200 photographers there waiting to take these photos. And the rest of the time, the rest of the year, it's just ignored.
That's so interesting. And I never thought about it. I've just noticed it. That is interesting how it happens with a waterfall some other place in the world.
Yeah.
1 day or 2 days. It's interesting. Let's talk about a bit more about how these techniques add to your story after a song.
Okay, here's Cold Chisel's latest track, Getting the Band Back Together.
The kids all gone, but it's all
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show, and we're talking to Greg Carrick about photography. Now, Greg, there are all these different techniques that you can use in your photography, but the main point is the story. So how do these techniques help you tell a story?
Okay, well, a lot of it is connecting to the viewer, because actually it just brought to mind a picture I took probably 10 years ago of an old bench seat in Mount Evelyn. The seat's no longer there, it's been replaced, but it was an old wooden bench seat and it was covered in moss and lichen and stuff, and it just caught my eye, so I took a picture of it and published it, and it affected people in so many different ways. Some people looked at it as, oh, that's a nice picture, and then moved on. Others saw it, and it just went through all their defences, and it spoke to them of their own personal story and sometimes struggle. It spoke to people of loneliness and their sort of journey with things like depression and so on. And it had a very, very strong effect on them. So people see more than you do, or see things differently than the person taking the photo. So story can vary, because once you put a picture out there, it's not really your picture. I mean, you made it, but you don't own it. People see things through their own eyes and their own story and their own backstory, and have different interpretations of what you're presenting. So some pictures that to you might be innocuous can be very, very powerful to other people. So people bring their own story into what you're presenting with a picture. So the more you define something in a photo, the more you lock down your version of the story of what the picture's about. But the less you lock down, the more generic or ephemeral the thing is in your picture, the wider, the more you open it up to different interpretations. So to me, that's something out of my control. If I take a photo, I can't control how people are going to view it. I can try to control it by putting more and more detail, and the more and more detail in the picture, the more it locks down a particular story. But sometimes you can just take a photo of something you think is just a bench seat, and it means so much more to other people. So there's things outside of your control, but also it's very interesting because it hits people in so many different ways. And it's photos like that that have more impact and more story to them than a lot of other photos. So some pictures you take will last longer and have more impact and effect than others. And you can't really control that.
A photograph is like a symbol then. It just stands for a symbol, and how it's interpreted is very individual. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, some people like a particular photo or a painting to hang on their wall, and others think, oh, that's revolting. I wouldn't have that in my house, you know, because different things have different impacts on different people, because we're all different. When I was going through Melbourne taking photos, I did that because it was unusual in itself. Melbourne is a busy city normally, but to see it in lockdown presents Melbourne in a totally different light. I've been able to take pictures of Flinders Street and the clocks, where there's nothing there except a seagull on the steps. You know, it's so deserted, Melbourne. De Grave Street, which is famous for its cafes, world famous. People come, you know, oh, we'll eat at De Grave Street. I photographed that, totally empty. All the cafes locked up, nothing was happening. Hosier Lane, which is also world famous for its graffiti. Every time I go there, the place is packed and there's tourists and people taking photos and everything. When I went to Hosier Lane to take photos in lockdown, I was the only person there. I just cruised up and down the lane and stood there for half an hour. No one else was there. It was absolutely amazing. So pictures like that have their own way of telling a story, because they're pictures of a city that's empty. And that has its own story to it.
Mm. You can see these pictures. We'll actually put them up on the podcast page.
Yeah.
A link to that.
Now, it's funny. My trip to Melbourne and taking photos in lockdown had two knock-on effects. One was some people in America were releasing a song about lockdown and the COVID virus effect that it had on cities, and they put out a song called We're All In This Together. It just got released last week and on YouTube, and to go with it, there were videos and photos from around the world of cities in lockdown, and somehow they got my name and one of my photos ended up in that, photos of Melbourne. But also an article in the International Photography magazine also did the same thing. It selected pictures from photographers around the world, and I think two of my pictures got in that article about Melbourne in lockdown.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I didn't push the picture. I made a YouTube thing. I've got a YouTube channel on photography, and I made a YouTube of my trip to Melbourne and that, but I have very, very few followers, and I don't know how to market it, so I'm not well known for that YouTube channel. But somehow word got out, and these two different people got onto me, one for a video and one for a magazine article.
Fantastic. We'll put that link on to the podcast page on Yarra Valley FM, so that people can have a look at the video.
Yeah.
And some of your photos.
Now, if you want to know more about photography, or you're interested in it, or you're just learning or whatever, there's groups you can join. And there's one group in the Yarra Valley. It's called the Yarra Rangers Photographic Society. And they meet every month. Normally we meet at the Coldstream Community Centre, but during this lockdown period we can't, of course, so we're doing a lot of things online. But we have workshops every month. We have sort of these competitions or evaluation nights where you submit your photos on a particular subject and get them actually judged by a photographic expert. But we also have lots of outings during the month as well. And they might be different things. They might concentrate on landscape photography or city photography, or visiting tourist spots and just taking shots. So there's lots of things happening through the photo club, and that's a little non-profit group, and there's about 44 or 46 people members at the moment. And it's very lively. We've got our own Facebook page and all that sort of stuff. If you want to know more, there's a website. It's simply yrps.org. It stands for Yarra Rangers Photographic Society. So yrps.org. Go and check it out. And if you're interested in photography at all on any level, because we have absolute beginners to retired experts that have, you know, spent 60 years behind a camera. We have people who know all the software and Photoshop and stuff, and it's very non-judgmental, from absolute beginners to professionals. Yeah, we've got all those as members, and we're all happy together. So,
You also have guest speakers on a regular basis.
Yeah, we have guests in who might talk about they're on our workshop nights. So we'll cover all sorts of different types of photography through our guest speakers.
Well, thank you so much, Greg, for this interview on Art General. It's been a real pleasure talking about photography with you.